well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. Happy Veterans Day to those of you who have served. Thank you so much for your service, and I hope that you have a wonderful day today. We're going to be talking with Alan Gottlieb of the Second Amendment Foundation, a wonderful decision, for the most part, coming down on Friday afternoon. U.S. District Judge Stephen McGlynn declaring that Illinois' ban on so-called assault weapons in large-capacity magazines violates our right to keep and bear arms. I say for the most part it was a good decision. He did stay his decision for 30 days to allow the state of Illinois to appeal. They have appealed. So for right now, all the provisions that McGlynn said were unconstitutional in the Protect Illinois Communities Act are still in place. And Judge McGlynn also found that 50 caliber rifles, actually 50 caliber firearms, not protected by the Second Amendment, although semi-automatic firearms of other calibers may be, in fact, are, according to Judge McGlynn. So let's talk about this again with Alan Gottlieb. I also want to get to Alan's thoughts on last week's election and what this means for our right to keep and bear arms going forward. It's a great conversation. Take a look and a listen. Alan, thank you so much, sir, for coming on the program. It's good to see you again.
It's always great to be with you, Cam, and your listeners and viewers. Thank you.
Absolutely. It has been a very busy week, both in terms of the election. We've got litigation to talk about. And I'm just curious to get your thoughts, first of all, on what we know here about the election. Donald Trump winning the White House, Republicans going to take control of the Senate. Still have some outstanding House races, but it looks like Republicans are going to keep control of the House as well, Alan.
Yeah, I think we've got obviously the White House, the Senate. I believe we're going to have the House of Representatives as well. So we have a trifecta there, and with a gun-friendly Supreme Court right now, we're in a process of moving our football down the field, so to speak, to score touchdowns for gun rights. I feel really pumped.
As well you should, I think. And we got this great decision on Friday afternoon from Judge Stephen McGlynn. It's taking on, this is what, almost a half dozen lawsuits, including litigation from the Second Amendment Foundation, taking on Illinois' ban on large capacity magazines, their ban on so-called assault weapons. And in this 168-page decision, Alan, Judge McGlynn says, listen, these arms are in common use. They are protected by the Second Amendment. You can't play these games where, you know, they're military arms more suited to use by the U.S. military. In fact, Judge McGlynn said, even if that was the case, in the Seventh Circuit, they've talked about a dual use exception, right? So there are some arms that the military uses that civilians also use. And Judge McGlynn said AR-15s and these other semi-automatic firearms would clearly fall under that dual use exemption that the Seventh Circuit has talked about.
Yeah, it's a great decision. It's, you know, very reasoned, well written out. We knew we were going to get it. This judge obviously had previously granted us a temporary restraining order against the law, saying we had likelihood we were going to win. It got kicked around a bit where we had to make some additional rulings on it. There's no doubt we were going to win it. Illinois knew it, and because Illinois knew it, as soon as we won it, they immediately filed for their notice of appeal to the appeals court. And this will work its way on up. But probably, and it's my hope, that the case known as Snopes out of Maryland, which used to be called Bianchi, challenging their assault weapon ban and so-called magazine capacity ban, is sitting at the Supreme Court. Hopefully we're going to be granted a cert petition. We should probably get there before the Illinois one. But again, it's one more notch in our belt. It's one more victory that helps us compel the Supreme Court to have to hear the case. We've got similar wins in other places like California as well. And we still got challenges going on these things in Washington and Oregon and other states. So the bottom line is this was an important win for us, and it helps bolster all our other suits.
I was going to say, we know that the Supreme Court is going to consider Snopes in conference next month, and hopefully we'll get a decision, and hopefully it'll be a decision to grant cert a few weeks after they hear this in conference. But, you know, is something like Judge McGlynn's decision, is that something that they'll look at? Because, you know, the Fourth Circuit, which is where Snopes comes from, Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals said Maryland's ban on assault weapons is fine. And again, they use the same rationale that we've heard from other courts, right, that AR-15s are like machine guns, basically the same argument that Illinois raised, that these are guns that are not protected by the Second Amendment. They're dangerous and unusual. They're like full automatic machine guns. And Judge McGlynn really took that argument apart. So will they be looking at Judge McGlynn's opinion in addition to all of the amicus briefs that have been filed in support of granting cert to Snopes versus Brown?
Yeah, they definitely will, Cam. And the reason is, again, it creates a split in decisions, and they can't leave the lower courts to be uncertain. And so this split, again, against that Maryland decision that we're appealing to the U.S. Supreme Court right now can only help us. It can't hurt us at all. I'm real happy about it. And quite frankly, it's a case the court has to take. So if they don't take Snopes, they may take this one out of Illinois. They may take one out of California. But we're going to get this whole issue before the Supreme Court. It's just a matter of time. Unfortunately for gun owners, a right delayed is a right denied. And it's already been too many years.
Yeah. And unfortunately, Judge McGlynn did grant to Illinois a 30-day stay for them to appeal. They have appealed. So for now, the decision remains on hold, and we'll see what the Seventh Circuit does. They earlier overturned Judge McGlynn's temporary injunction or preliminary injunction. So I'm not particularly confident that the Seventh Circuit is going to allow Judge McGlynn's decision to take effect. So in the short term, things might not change in Illinois. But as you say, long term, this is a really, really positive step.
Yeah, let me make a comment about that. We're not going to necessarily get the same panel that kicked it back down to his court. So in the appeals court, we could get three completely different judges, which could make a whole different decision.
Okay, that's something to keep in mind, right? Because when you're talking about a three-judge panel, you can have, look, we've seen some good decisions come out of the Ninth Circuit when it comes to three-judge panels, right? So all hope is not lost at this point.
Correct.
Okay, well, that is very good news. Now, talking about the election, what do you anticipate from the Trump administration, Alan? Obviously, I don't think we're concerned about the Trump administration, pushing federal red flag laws or anything that we saw from the Biden administration. But do you think Second Amendment advocates are going to have a seat at the table in the Trump administration?
Oh, most definitely. Let me start by saying a lot of people don't know that they know me with the Second Amendment Foundation, but they don't know that I also run something called the American Political Action Committee, AmeriPAC. And AmeriPAC raised $3.6 million for this race, and we identified 12 million low-propensity voter gun owners, gun rights supporters in 11 states, and Trump and the administration know this. And we turned that vote out, and we spent a lot of money in those 11 states on emails, text messages, and social media ads aimed at gun owners in those particular states, which helped flip the Senate as well, by the way, because those are some of the states we used. And so gun owners really were the margin of victory in this race. And Trump knows that, his people know it. And not only that, though, but in all honesty, our opponents know it. And they're going to want to double down and get even with gun owners because we're the ones who put Trump in the White House. I'm headed to Mar-a-Lago. I'll be there Thursday through Saturday, meeting with many of the people, some of the people on the transition team, the White House, hopefully President Trump himself, depending on what his scheduling is going to actually be, bouncing back and forth around the country. And so we have a seat at the table from day one. And I'm going to make it known what our agenda is and what we're looking for out of the next Trump administration to make sure we're presented. Completely 180 degrees difference than the Biden administration, where we would never even get a shout out ever. It was total, we were total considered enemies, so to speak. And as a result, this is like 180 degree change. So I feel really happy about it. I can't wait to get to Mar-a-Lago, and some of it are meetings, some of it are receptions. One's a gala celebration dinner. So I'm really excited about it.
Well, you quite literally have a seat at the table, which is very good to hear. And I hope that you'll come on the program after you get back and give us an after action report.
I would love to do that, Cam.
Excellent. Now I want to go back and talk about those low propensity voters that you talked about, those gun owning voters, because that's fascinating to me. And we saw, we saw this huge shift to the right. And it wasn't just that, the rural parts of the country, which are already pretty conservative, became even more conservative, right? We saw Republicans make gains in the suburbs, even in Democratic strongholds, even in urban areas. You saw, in some cases, a 10, 20 point shift to the right. Now, obviously, again, gun control should be a nonpartisan issue. It shouldn't be R versus D, but we know that politically that's just sort of how it goes these days. I'm curious, do you think that were some of those low propensity voters that you reached out to, were they in those urban areas? Were they in the suburbs? And yeah, they were.
That's a really good question. And the answer is yeah, because we what we did was we looked at the states. So like Pennsylvania, as an example, was one of our states that we went to. We didn't care where gun owners or gun rights supporters lived. It didn't matter if you're in Philadelphia or Pittsburgh or in a rural area. Our intent was to turn you out because we needed the statewide vote. And so we targeted those people. It was really very interesting because we could tell, you know, in states where they had mail-in ballots or, absentee ballots, we could tell if those ballots were being, you know, turned in or not on state records. And so we'd know who to contact if their ballot wasn't in yet with the text messaging, the emails and social media ads aimed at those particular people because we tied our stuff all to their social media accounts with ads. It was a very, the gun owners, we ran a very sophisticated turnout effort that really paid off really big.
What do you think that means for the gun control debate going forward? Chris Murphy, a Democrat senator from Connecticut, had this like 10-part thread on X yesterday talking about the need for the Democratic Party to do some soul searching. One of the things that he talked about was, gun owners being let into the tent. And they're not going to be with us 100% on gun issues or climate, but they still going to be let into the tent, which to me gets it backwards, right? It's not that gun owners could go into the Democratic tent if they wanted to, but why would they want to if their rights are being attacked? If they're told, by candidates like Kamala Harris, I support the Second Amendment, but I want to take your guns away, right? But I want to ban semi-automatic firearms, but I want to do this and I want to do that. Is this a moment where the Democrats have a chance to actually meet gun owners and to say, okay, we were wrong about some things? And do you think they'll take that chance and that opportunity?
No, I think that's a disingenuous invitation, quite honestly. They're not going to change their positions. A lot of them have already talked about doubling down, the few reasonable Democrats in the Senate, like Joe Manchin, isn't going to be there anymore. So finding anybody who's having any agreement with is like slim to nil, particularly the leadership. It's just no way it's going to happen, and they're already doubling down. If you look at some of the statements from legislators in some of the states that they control, Massachusetts, Connecticut, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Illinois, Washington, Oregon, California, Hawaii, they're going to double down, and they're doubling down for a couple of reasons. One is they're angry with gun owners right now. They know the margin of difference. We cost them being in power right now. They know that, and they want to come back down our throats. So this fight isn't going away. While on the federal level, we're in great shape. The truth of the matter is, in some of those states that they still control, they're going to flex their muscles. Just like after the Bruin decision, instead of backing down a little bit and coming up with something sensible, they doubled down and came up with proposals that were more anti-gun and more unconstitutional than what the Supreme Court struck down in Bruin. I expect to see the same thing.
I suspect you're right. And again, in those battleground states, I think it's going to hurt the Democrat brand even more. But you're right. California, Massachusetts, the usual suspects, right? The deep blue states, they are going to pitch a fit. They are going to throw a temper tantrum, I think, similar to what we saw after Bruin. The use word punish gun owners. I think you're right. I hate it. But I think that you're right, that gun owners will be the subject of the ire of people like Gavin Newsom or Maura Healey or Phil Murphy in New Jersey, because, as you say, they blame gun owners for the position they find themselves in.
Yeah, and I guess in this case, it's rightly so. So I have to agree with them. The position they're in is because we turned out to vote.
That's right. Well, listen, Alan, again, thank you so much, sir, for coming on the program this week. It is great to see you and good talking with you. Have a fantastic time at Mar-a-Lago. And again, I hope that we can get you back on the show next week to talk about it.
You got it. Thank you, Cam. Have a great day.
You too. Alan Gottlieb from the Second Amendment Foundation joining us here on Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My thanks once again to Alan for joining us on the program, and looking forward to having him back again next week. Probably not next Monday, because I think he's probably going to be a little jet lag, but maybe we'll pick up with our Mondays with Mark and have Mark Walters from Armed American Radio on the program next Monday. Tomorrow, by the way, we're going to be talking with Jim Wallace of the Gun Owners Action League, more of the fallout about Chapter 135 in Massachusetts. This time, particularly dealing with hunters and non-resident hunters, because even though this gun control bill was, it was kind of the messaging around it was, oh, it's all about public safety. It's about, fighting crime. No, it's about gun ownership. It's about every aspect of gun ownership, including, again, hunters coming in from out of the state who are now apparently getting some bad advice from at least one state agency. So again, we'll be talking with Jim Wallace from the Gun Owners Action League about that tomorrow on Cam and Company. Right now, though, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story. Excuse me, our good deed of the day and our recidivist report. We will start there with a story out of Houston, Texas. Ex-convict on probation, free from jail on low bond, accused of murdering a 22-year-old woman. Yeah, and this is one of those stories that, again, I mean, just leaves you scratching your head. Fox 26 in Houston, they've got a regular series called Breaking Bond. And they go and they look at basically the cases that we look at here on the recidivist report, but they do it just specifically in the Houston area. And one of the latest cases that they're talking about is a guy named Serdarian Thompson, who they say is a penchant for guns and violence. But that didn't stop a criminal court judge, Joss Hill, from giving Thompson break after break. So 12 years ago, 2012, Thompson was sentenced to 8 years in prison for multiple home invasions on the southeast side of Houston. These were violent home invasions. Andy Cahan with the Crime Stoppers in Houston says he beat up the residents. He beat up women. He put a gun to their heads. This was bold and brazen, he says. So he gets that 8-year sentence, right? And then by 2022, he's out on probation. He is caught in possession of a firearm. He ends up pleading guilty to possession of a felon and being a felon in possession of a weapon. And the judge in this case, Josh Hill, sentences Thompson to deferred probation. So as a convicted felon, Thompson could have been eligible, if this case had been referred to federal court, up to 10 years in prison. As a violent felon, even if those of us who say, okay, listen, these nonviolent felonies shouldn't be a prohibiting factor. A guy like Brian Range, who pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor for falsifying his income on a food stamp application 30 years ago, there's no way and no reason why he should be forevermore prohibited from owning a firearm. That's a different case than somebody who you could argue does have a history of dangerousness, right? The courts have indicated that in those cases, it might very well be constitutional to deprive somebody of their right to keep and bear arms. And regardless, quite frankly, of how we feel about the law, that is the law that's on the books right now. Thompson was eligible to return to prison for illegally possessing a firearm as a convicted felon, and instead the judge gave him probation. Well, Fox 26 in Houston says within 3 months after getting deferred probation in March of 2022, Thompson is charged again with more violent felonies. Another aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, which he is alleged to have shot the victim as well. Judge Josh Hill had the opportunity at that point to revoke Thompson's probation, send him back to prison, but instead the judge allowed him to remain free on $70,000 bond. Andy Cahan with Crime Stoppers in Houston says he gets out on a really paltry, minuscule bond considering his violent history. And Fox 26 in Houston says Judge Hill's decision to give Thompson his freedom may have cost 22-year-old Kiambra Bibbs her life. According to court records, she knew Thompson. And on September 4th of this year, police say that Thompson shot Kiambra Bibbs multiple times, then dumped her body in a parking garage at an office building. He appeared in court on September 17th, 13 days after he allegedly murdered Bibbs. He wasn't charged with her murder until October 31st. And last Tuesday, he turned himself in. KN with Houston Crime Stoppers says this was a tragedy. But he was also called it a preventable tragedy because you had him multiple times. But we, quote, continued to put him back out. And now we have a young lady dead. Yeah, I mean, again, multiple opportunities to take Serdarian Thompson's criminal history seriously. And again, on multiple occasions, a judge basically shrugged his shoulders and said, never mind, we're going to release you anyway. And today's Armed Citizen story, also from the Lone Star State of Texas, up near the Dallas area, where a woman in DeSoto, Texas, shot a home intruder on Friday night, critically injuring that suspect. It was just before 8 p.m. on Friday. Police in DeSoto, Texas, responding to a home after a woman called 911, telling a dispatcher that there was a guy that she did not know in her backyard who was armed with a pistol and trying to break into her home. The Dallas Morning News reports that the 911 operator could hear screaming and yelling on the call as this guy attempted to force his way in through the garage, Several neighbors apparently also simultaneously called 911 to report gunshots. When police arrived at 7:57 p.m., the woman met them out in front of the home. She told police that she had noticed a truck that was following her in her neighborhood that pulled into her driveway right behind her. She said that she ran into the home. She called 911 and armed herself with a handgun. But when the man, who was later identified as Floris Mondragon, attempted to force his way inside the residence, that's when she fired multiple gunshots. When police searched the residence, they found Mondragon lying in the garage with a pistol next to him. He had two gunshot wounds, one to the chest, one to the face, taken to a local hospital at last report in critical condition. He was arrested on a charge of burglary of a habitation with intent to commit another felony. At this point, not clear if he's still in the hospital or if he had been transferred to the Dallas County Jail. The victim in this case not facing any charges. Police haven't said if there was any sort of previous relationship between the two, if this was a crime of opportunity, if Mondragon simply did, you know, maybe try to rob this woman in her driveway. We have seen those stories before, right? People get trailed as they're leaving their home or they're leaving work, maybe leaving a casino. And then as they pull into their driveway, they go inside or they're getting ready to go inside. Car pulls up behind them. One or more assailants gets out, robs them at gunpoint. Again, we don't know what Mondragon's motivation or his alleged motivation might have been, but we'll keep our eyes out for any more details. And thankfully, again, this woman in DeSoto, Texas, alive and well, unharmed, because she was able to protect herself from that armed intruder trying to get into her home. Finally today, our good deed of the day: in the right place at the right time, while unable to do the right thing. You know, we have so many crummy stories from Chicago. So many stories about career criminals who are just getting a slap on the wrist. It's nice to actually have some good news out of Chicago to report. Here's the headline: man loses wallet full of cash in the rain in Chicago. Another man finds it and comes to the front door. So, yeah, again, this isn't raising up a car or rescuing somebody from a burning home, but it is still a good deed. Ezekiel Fuentes went to vote last Tuesday. I don't know how he voted. Not going to ask. He said it was raining outside. He said, I ran outside with my baby. He said, I don't know at what point I lost my wallet. But he didn't realize that his wallet was gone until he got to a store. He said, at the moment of pay, I'm like, where's my wallet? I thought I left it in the car. So I ran to the car. I looked everywhere. And at this time, it's still raining. And then he kind of starts to panic, right? He's got his ID. He's got his credit cards. But he also had a lot of cash. He said, quite an amount of money in there. He said, I was going to go to the bank to deposit it, but I didn't get a chance to do that. So while Fuentes is, again, just desperately trying to figure out, retrace his steps, where did I lose this? Luis Cruz had just finished voting, same precinct in Harrison Park. And he said, I saw the wallet. So he picked it up and he said, I saw the money in the wallet. He said, there was a discussion. He said, but it was short-lived. So like, hey, do we keep this? We know who this is. I can see the ID. Cruz said he knew whoever dropped the $1,000, which was what was in the wallet, had a need for it, and he knew that he couldn't keep it. He said, even if I would have needed it or I could have used it, I think I'm okay with what I did. So he went to Fuentes' home, banged on the door. Fuentes' stepdaughter, Alondra Pena, said it was hard banging, and I was in the back of the house. I was like, what the hell's going on? So she goes to the door. She doesn't recognize the guy out front, right? And she was very reluctant to open the door, but just as he's getting ready to leave, she did open the door. Cruz then showed Pena the wallet. Cruz said, I was the one asking, do you know the person who lives here? Because I found his wallet. He said, I could just tell how shocked she was that I was returning it. At that point, Fuentes is at the park where he voted, lurking frantically. He gets a call from his stepdaughter. Fuentes said, she's like, hey, somebody found your wallet and brought it home. And I'm like, oh, my God, my heart just like sank right there. It was complete peace. Cruz didn't wait around, by the way, for Fuentes to show up. Once he dropped off the wallet to the stepdaughter, he was gone. So she went on social media. She didn't know his name, by the way. At that point, he was just an anonymous Good Samaritan. She goes on social media. She shares images from her doorbell camera. And she said, a friend messaged me and said, hey, that's my cousin. So they were able to reunite CBS News in Chicago. There as Cruz and Fuentes shook hands, Fuentes calling him an angel. Cruz says he doesn't think of himself that way. He said, I think I just did what everybody hopes somebody would do for them, which is true. But the fact is that not everybody would do that for a total stranger. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to help Ezequiel Fuentes in his moment of need. Yeah, Mr. Cruz in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Luis Cruz, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Don't forget to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day, keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation, including disarmament policies that are putting us all at risk. We got the latest on anti-gun legislation, the temper tantrum that Alan Gottlieb spoke about as well. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Jim Wallace from the Gun Owners Action going to be with us. Until then, enjoy your Monday. Well as Mondays can be enjoyed. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Be well. Be safe. Be free.